Hello and welcome back everybody to Super Woo Radio, episode number 15, here with Ollie Demigard. Ollie, I had a chat with you in the break, and it seems like you and I have embarked recently on wanting to do the same thing and really communicate with people. And I wanted to bring to our audience's attention that, like myself, you are now offering one-on-one sessions. So would you like to explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. It's on my website, www.lightonconspiracies.com. There's one option where it says pick my brain, which is like where I offer Skype sessions, private Skype sessions or groups or whatever, on donation recommended. And where I just, anything I can help with or assist with or anything, just pick my brain, shoot away, and I'll do my best to help sort out whatever question marks there is.
Fantastic, because you are most certainly a wealth of knowledge. You really are an ocean of knowledge and wisdom. And I recommend anybody who has an interest in this, or even just an interest in understanding a person's journey who's really had a vast range of experiences, it'd be great, very beneficial to have that private session, because I'm finding them very beneficial. And the people who are having private sessions with me, for example, we have a wonderful exchange because it's a private and intimate setting, and you get to just relax and have this really wonderful discussion with people. So I recommend anybody who has an interest in Ollie's work to please consider that.
Thank you. And I know, like you say, I really love doing it as well. And also, if anyone would like me to come as a speaker or whatever, in whatever form that is needed or can be arranged, please contact me. I'll be happy to assist in any way I can.
That's wonderful. Okay, Ollie, where would you like to take this discussion next? Because I feel that, you know, like we said, it's the depth and the magnitude of what we're discussing is so vast and deep. I'll tell you where I would like it to head towards, if we could manage to do that. For me, my interest is more in the upper echelons of, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff. Instead of the puppets, I'm interested in who's pulling the strings. So eventually in our discussion, I would like it to get into that hierarchy of the unseen and the, you know, those ones that are lurking behind the shadows, because that's where, you know, it's kind of where I specialize into that sort of thing. So I'd love to see from your perspective and from the research you have done where it leads to, because I feel that those ones that are hidden behind the scenes, who are the string pullers or the puppeteers, you could say, the generals that run those operations, and I don't mean that in a military sense, even though some of them are involved, it really comes down to these specialized people that seem to have infiltrated a lot of different groups and secret societies and what have you. And it seems to be the same players, even though that, again, each one of those is fiercely compartmentalized as well. And groups, and some people in some groups don't even realize that members of their groups belong to other groups, for example, and so on and so on. So take it wherever it needs to go. But eventually I would love for it to lead into that realm, if we could possibly, please.
For sure. No, over the years, I've looked into so many different things, and I always approach things from a what I call Farmer Brown approach, that, you know, like if there's 8 bullets in a gun and 12 shots fired, there's more than one shooter. I mean, you don't have to be very clever. It's a no-brainer. But these are the things that we're being pumped with all the time. No, it was one lone crazy guy. So I've looked into so many of these different, anything from Oklahoma City, 9/11, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, John Lennon. John Lennon, it might be one that you would be interested in.
I am very much interested in John Lennon and JFK and
the overtake in Argentina, Operation Condor, the Vietnam War, you name it, you know, like even now, all the way up to Michael Hastings and so on. And what one thing that keeps coming back is that it points in the exact same direction. That one, the more deeper I get into it, I come back to the same group of people. And like many might be have the knowledge is that it is a power pyramid, a pyramid of power that is built up in many, many different layers, totally compartmentalized, where, like you say, like the people inside the pyramid, they don't even know what's going on. They think they do, but they don't. And so the people actually controlling it are very few, I think. I don't even know who they are. I know to a certain level, and I've made a decision to take it to one level where I know for sure that these people are involved. And then I let it, let the rest be for people like yourself who are, have more knowledge and have more passion about finding out that, because like, you know, this is such a massive area that you need to focus somewhere. Otherwise you just become a tinfoil hat and paranoid for everything. And it doesn't make any sense to anyone what you're saying if you just go all over the place. So what I've come to is, I've come up to the level of the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, and the Council on Foreign Relations. That's where I stop. I know for sure that there are higher levels, no doubt. But who they are, I don't know. But these three groups, and very often people are members of more than one at the same time, these are players that are on duty, active players. Doing the part, but even in these groups, they don't all know what's going on. I mean, they're just in shock wars, I would say. It's like I don't envy a lot of these people, because the higher up you come, I think the more dangerous it gets. The more you start understanding who are you involved with, I would not sleep well at night, you know, and what I put on my karma, what my deeds are doing, what my greed is forcing me or have put me in this situation. Oof, not a nice place.
You know, well, I've got a number of friends in the corporate world, and I've got one of the many says to me, you know, when you're dealing in big businesses, it's like being in the sewers. That's, you know, the energy's disgusting. It's like being in the sewers. And that's what it's like up there at the top end. You know, the glamour is just the sugar coating, but the substance inside is really, it's not something I'm interested, definitely not something, anything that I would aspire to personally. I know I have in previous lives, and I know where it led to and what I achieved and, you know, and where it got me. So definitely not interested in that kind of scene whatsoever.
I think Oliver Stone made a film called Nixon, about Richard Nixon. I don't know if you've seen it, but
I haven't.
There he shows it, I think, very much in the energy that you got into, like Richard Nixon being from, I mean, most of these people are nobodies. They're not even very clever, but their desire and greed for power and position and their low self-esteem pushes them into dealing and getting higher and higher up in these, where they totally lose themselves. And I think Oliver Stone has made, in this film, you can really feel the energies that he's getting into, where he just feels, sod me, I'm way too deep in. And that's also why he got so paranoid when he got to power and started, you know, making all of these secret recordings and trying to cover his tracks, and oof, not a nice place to be.
No, it's not a very nice environment at all, not pleasant at all. And I really actually have a lot of admiration and respect for the people who are in that environment and are actually genuinely want to change things for the better. You know, because that's a really tough gig. I mean, I did that in a recent era of humanity. I held a very high position. I'm not going to share it. It's a personal thing from a previous life. And I held a very high position in the hierarchy in recent times on this planet. And I tried working and helping and fixing things and making it right from that place. So I remember what it was like. I remember what I got myself into. And so I get it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I come to realize that we now need to do it from the ground up.
Yeah.
You know, we, not from the top down. Last time I tried doing it from the top down, it doesn't work. Now I'm trying to do it from the bottom up and just it's some much better place to be, because here we get to be grounded with the real people, and this is what I love, where we can stand shoulder to shoulder like this and just be as authentic as we possibly can and do it for the right reasons. And we can sleep at night, you know?
Yes.
Whereas they can't. They have problems sleeping at night, but I'm happy to sleep at night. I go to bed and I feel good about myself every time I go to bed, and I feel comfortable being in my own skin. And that's the difference.
Do you know, there's, just like you say, there's like people like JFK and Olof Palme, they were part of the elite, you know, and like they were people that the elite thought they could trust. And they could, to start with, but then they got big-headed, or they started doing the Shah as well. They took a left when they were supposed to stay on track. And the reason why they were taken out so violently and so publicly as well was to show and inflict fear in the powers of the corridors of power, to say that we can get anyone, anywhere, anytime. You know, because otherwise, yep, it's so easy to slip a pill in Kennedy's coffee, or you know, yep, Palmer, just let him die.
They could have done it in so many other ways, couldn't they?
So discreet, so easy. But this is not the reason. They do it to smack it right in the face. And that is also why afterwards, after these attacks, there's this conspiracy of silence. It's the people do not know the details, but they know the power behind it. And that is why they're standing up. So many of these people that are standing up on national TV and not speaking out, and not, it's not because they know what happened, but it they know what will happen to them if they start.
Exactly.
So people like you say that stands up, who are inside, I can only applaud big time. And yeah, I totally embrace that person. Whatever he's done, calming my arms, you know, let's hug, you know. Just like in South Africa with the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, that's the way to go, you know, come to a point. It's just like we need to put a stop to this, and we need to forgive each other, and we need to move forward next to each other. It's a divine game, a trick of light. We need villains to be able to see the light. We need left to see right. We need up to know what down is. And it's sort of like, in one way, I think that if we go on a soul level, the souls that I call the people of the elite, I call them black angels. I think that they are like most people that we can really learn the most from in this life is the so-called bad guys, the so-called boils in the butt, the people that really annoys you. These are the people that we can learn the most from. And so that is why I put no judgment on them. I just want to expose what's going on, so that this whole, it feels like it's game over. This is it's all time. It's time for us to lift above this whole thing. and I think also that in one way we should thank these people, because when you look at it on a karma level, they
exactly
put a lot on their shoulders. My God, they so it's extremely kind of them to be this awful. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It does. That's what you just talked about is exactly a main part of my message, is we need to embrace them as well, because they're role-playing for us, because from a higher level, they volunteered to play this role for us. And when you move beyond the drama vortex of this version of duality, you get to the understanding that we're actually all brothers and sisters on a higher level, and everybody's equal, and there is no bad guy or good guy. Everyone's the same.
Hallelujah. That's what I say.
No. Fantastic stuff, Ollie.
So, but at the same time, we're here in this body here and now. They're there in their body here and now. And our job is to come to a point where we can transcend this stage. And the only way to do that is by exposing. That's the only way I can see. By exposure and forgiveness and meeting in love and embracement. That's the only way to move forward. And
Because the exposure leads to realization. which then reads to awareness and revelation. And so I feel that that's a very important part of the process. Yeah, exposure is really, really important.
Thank you. So do I. And I'm doing anyone who are listening to, please give me leads to other ways of exposing this, other radio station, TV program, whatever it is, I'll do it. You know, I'll be happy to do it. I'm not here to debate. I'm here to share whatever I've gathered along the way. So please contact me. I'm so open for whatever.
Yeah. Fantastic. And we'll get to a bit more of that later, because I know that that can go in many places. The one thing I want to talk about now is there's also a group called the 300. And when I feel into that group, because I'm not a research person, I'm someone who does work behind the scenes, from even I go off world and do work in the off world hierarchy, which is influencing the planet, and then how that interacts with the planet. And that's the area that I specialize in. And I know that this group that call themselves this group of 300, their ideology comes from the ancient Greek group of 300 soldiers, and they're using the romantic idea, and I don't mean to be derogatory towards them when I say that, because I know the 300 in the times of ancient Greece were very powerful warriors, and their ethics and the morals. But what they take out of it, because this is what they're trying to do, they're using that as their model, but the traits of that the ancient Greek warriors, there's part of that Spartan training and the way of the Spartan warriors, I would say a lot more of the unsavory, of really this unforgiving approach of, you know, no compromise, and that the agenda is everything and what have you. And this is probably what they've employed more, and this is kind of like the ethos behind their thinking, and therefore that influences their policies that they wish to implement on humanity. So I don't know if you know much about the 300, but this is my understanding of this group, and I thought I'd just use that as a trigger for you to take it from there.
Are we talking about the Committee of 300?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know enough to speak about that. Normally I only speak about things I know about. It's better to shut up the rest of the time. And with this group, what I do know is that it's very, very interesting to check out the members there. Olof Palme was one of the members that they couldn't trust.
Now, isn't that interesting?
And here's something even more interesting, is that one of the assassins that took him out is now a member there.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is absolutely like mind blowing when you think of it. His name is Stefano Della Chiai, and he was called the King of Terror. He's been part of many of these stay behind terror attacks both in Europe and in South America and so on. And he's been working tightly together with Michael Bernard Townley and other people in many different of these terror attacks, like in Bologna, the train bombings there, the train stations, and many, many. And he's also educated hundreds and hundreds of terrorists. The way I tell you, I don't think there is a true terrorist, like a terrorist the way we think. Every time I hear about a terror act and a terrorist is pointed out, when I look into it, they're funded by the same people, the same group, the same. It's like, same. And
yeah,
this is one of the guys who's been educated, lots of them. He's a small Italian guy, but still alive. And now he's one of the members, and he's been part of killing hundreds of people. So I think it's very significant to see him next to like David Rockefeller and Microsoft's dear founder here, and other people like that, and the royalties. And then you got like one of these massive assassins. And it was like, what? It really strange, isn't it? But at the same time, if you look at their point of view, he's been one of the the loyal people. You know, like he was,
yep.
Franco has said that he was one of, if you want to have a problem solved, he's the guy to use, you know. He
the go-to guy.
Yeah, he used to work with Klaus Barbier and all, you know, these former Nazis, really extreme Nazis, and Mengele, and nice people like that. So, and he's still around. Most of these people are still around. This is the whole thing. But one thing I think that could be interesting for you and the listeners are that I managed to find actual personal connections between many, many of these big events, or whatever you want to call them, assassinations over the years. It was.
Oh, we would love to hear about that. Honestly, if you can share, and
yeah, for sure.
You know, because a lot of our listeners too would be also interested in where the assassination of John Lennon would come into play and the link between him and JFK. I feel a strong link behind the scenes between JFK assassination and John Lennon assassination,
yeah,
because of the era and the ethos and the and basically the moral, I would say, commitment that these two people had to their cause.
Yeah, the main problem for this group is people that are peacemakers, that are saying, that have a voice that will be heard, and are saying, stop the war, make babies, don't,
yeah,
kill, you know, don't go out there and destroy and plunder and whatever. Be peaceful. That is a major problem for this group because they live on destruction, total destruction, rebuilding, and then destruct again. And
so basically, by that statement, what you're referring to is the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, that is it. But it's nowadays it's been so integrated with so many other parts in the music industry, the film industry, the all is in the media. Everything is entangled at this point because they've worked so hard to centralize the power over such a long time. So now the group is very easily targeted because it's so limited. These people, they're just everywhere. Yeah. Anyway, but one of the things that I found out to my big astonishment is that it seems like they've been using the same mechanics over 30, 40 years, or to a certain extent at least. And I heard an interview once where they said that why change a winning team? You know, you got a good team and you have, why not use them? And this is what they've been doing again and again and again. So let me rewind the tape and go back to the early 1960s when Dwight Eisenhower was still in power. He had,
yeah,
one of the people working for him was Richard Nixon. And what they decided, or what Eisenhower decided, because they had a big problem with Castro and Cuba and all of this thing, that they wanted to put together a hit team of professional assassins that could be used on an international basis. And this group, what they did was they created a group called Operation 40. The name was given Operation 40 because there were 40 original members. These were highly skilled assassins, mostly exiled Cubans, but under control by people like E. Howard Hunt, which is very central in the JFK assassination. You have other people also. I can just name a few of them. David Morales, he was the guy who was part of Operation 40. He was there in Dealey Plaza when Kennedy was shot. He was at the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was shot, by coincidence.
Wow.
He was the guy that took out Che Guevara in Bolivia.
Wow.
He was in a small group that tracked him down from the orders of George Bush Sr., among others, and Henry Kissinger, where another member, Felix Rodriguez, he was the man that guided the group and gave the orders to kill Che Guevara. The actual guy that killed him was David Morales, okay? Then,
wow.
Felix Rodriguez was very, very central in the whole Iran-Contras affair. You know, the whole Iran-Contras thing where weapons were stolen from the National Guard in the States serial numbers were taken out under the administration of Colin Powell, and then sent down to Nicaragua. And in the other way, they had massive amounts of drugs that was taken in from the same planes going in return. I mean, we're talking tons and tons and tons and tons of cocaine and other very hard drugs that was flown into the States. And they were flown in to start with. They were flown into a small airstrip in Arkansas to a small little village called Mena. And at that time, a man, like the governor, his name was Bill Clinton, and he was working together with a man called Dan Lasseter. These were the people who received the drugs. I mean, not people underneath them. They were actually there receiving it together with drugs.
These are really profound statements you're making. You realize this is...
George Bush Sr. was also on site to start with, okay? One of the major pilots in this whole operation was Barry Seals, who was also part of Operation 40 and who was taken out just a week before Olof Palme, because Olof Palme was also taken out because of his international illegal drug smuggling, no, arms smuggling. Okay, so you have also, there's another man in this Operation 40, his name was Jose Perdomo, and he was, for 10 years, he was the in command of this group. So we're talking top skilled assassins, yeah? That was used on very big scale. On the day that John Lennon was killed, you have to remember that, what was he doing at the time that he was killed? He was just about to make his comeback, you know? He was recording his new album. And this guy was listened to. People just did. When he said, stop the war, they would say, yeah, let's party, let's stop the war. Not in their agenda. Okay, so he was a major threat to them. Okay, so what happened was that this evening, when he came to the Dakota building, in the morning he had left to go to the studio, and this guy, Mark Chapman, who was a personal friend of the Bush family, there's another one, very strange friend.
Yep.
Okay. Being prepared, in other words. He was there in the morning, and he was also there in the evening when the couple came. And the official story says that he was standing to the right, and Yoko left the limo, and then John came afterwards. And Mark Chapman came and asked for an autograph, and he got the autograph. And then John Lennon entered, or I can't remember if he got the autograph in the morning, doesn't matter. But anyway, John Lennon passed him and went a few steps forward, and then four shots were fired, boom, boom, boom. And Lennon went down, he crawled into the lobby, Yoko Ono came screaming out, they took him to the hospital, and he died there. Okay, official story. One problem, Chapman was standing to the right, all shots were fired from the left. Okay.
Left.
So here comes Farmer Brown again. So who is standing at the left? Good question. There's a sort of like a small entry thing just where Lennon passed, where somebody could stand. There's a little doorway. Okay. The guy who was standing there was the doorman, a gentleman in his 70s or 60s, 70s, very nice looking like this, that you only can hear about him in the first witness accounts. You know, they said, he was arguing with a doorman. That is, there's one woman saying he was arguing with a doorman, and then the shots were fired. That doorman, his name was Jose Perdomo. The actual boss for this international hit team for 10 years, and he's the guy who works extra that evening. I mean, it's up to you.
That's just amazing. Yeah, like
coincidence or not. Anyway, this guy is just mentioned in the
beginning, crazy,
and then he disappears out of history. And officially, when you talk to other people in Operation 40, they said that he died 6 years earlier. But that, in my world, is absolute crap. You know, these people, they die officially so that they can go undercover and do a lot of other stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, they go.
Yeah, I can't, I cannot accept that someone like Saddam Hussein has passed on. I just don't feel it. I know Hitler lived in Argentina for many, many, he lived his life out down in South America. These people don't, they're part of a brotherhood and they play their roles, and, you know, them losing their positions in the public arena is death for them anyway, to a certain degree, but they just go underground. You know, they don't actually die.
I don't think so. Very often it's car accidents and the car turn on fire and there's a body inside. And, you know, who's that body? I don't know. Well, it was him.
Hmm.
Well, apparently not, because he's over there. Anyway.
Yeah.
Bob Marley. Do you want to hear about Bob Marley?
I definitely want to hear about Bob Marley, yes.
Once again, you have Peter Tosh, you have Bob Marley. Both of them, you know, saying, make peace the way, you know, stop it, you know. And Peter Tosh was under, you know, he said, even in his songs, he said, I'm being followed, I'm, you know, I'm being targeted and so on. And then he was shot down. I don't know so much about that murder, but it smells a long way. You know, there are two people coming to his house, taking them all for, as hostages, not saying why they were there, and then they were killed on the floor, you know, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Bob Marley, William Colby was the former director for the CIA. He was also part of building the whole Stay Behind movement in Europe, especially in Sweden. You're aware of the Stay Behind movement? Gladio.
No, I'm not aware of it. So can you, it's probably got to do with the rebuilding after the war, is it?
No, it's like in 1947, the NSA came up with a plan that they would.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's to be small, specialized military groups that would stay hidden.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but explain it for the listeners.
Okay, they created what they call a ghost army in all the different NATO countries, and in Sweden, who did not belong to NATO. You go figure. Anyway. This ghost army was there, built by small cells, not knowing about the rest of them, but there were like eight people in each, more or less. And there were lots of weapon depots, fuel depots, all of these things, radio. So they had like radio, weapons, fuel, all of these things. And then a massive net of these small cells all over the country, in all the different NATO countries. It was part of... to join the NATO, this was part of the terms you had to agree with. And officially, this ghost army, Stay Behind or Gladio, every country had their own name. But this is, the Gladio is the general name of it. Their task was that if the country should be invaded, the whole resistance movement would already be there. So you could smuggle out the leadership of the country, and they would go to London, and then boom, the whole resistance would already be there, and the resistance could then be directed from London. You know, so the idea is good. It's good, but we're talking about a massive amount of right-wing military extremists, most of them involved in this.
Yeah.
And what happened instead was that they, after a while, they noticed that, my God, we can use this violent weapon in a different way. So they started what they call the strategy of tension, which was to inflict terror and fear in society to get people to ask for more protection. So these are the groups that are again and again and again have done all of these horrific acts, awful, awful, awful things, blown up,
my goodness,
right, left and center to get the reaction. This is an old concept, very, very old, all the way back to the Roman ages, how to, it's called a problem reaction solution.
Yeah, it's actually older than that. It goes right back into the universe. You got cosmic empires approaching star systems and planetary populations, and they impose it on the whole system and assimilate them into their empires. And it's the same old system that has been used, and it's still being used here on Earth.
Yeah, I'm just going to describe it. It's like, if, for instance, if we are in a country like Sweden or Australia or something that is not used to military power in the streets, and if you do like a military coup, for instance, like in Argentina or Chile or something like that, you will be successful. You can take over a country, but then you have a hell of a lot of mess. You know, you got problems with resistance movements, demonstrations, whatever, you know, and having to defend for the rest of the world, defend your, like, this is why we did it. Lots of problems, you know, you need to have almost as many soldiers and policemen in the streets as there are people, and loads and loads and loads of laws that needs to be controlled and filled prisons. And so you have a problem. So it's a lot easier to secretly create a problem. This is very often done with a bomb. They love bombs because they're really efficient, you know. Secretly create a bomb, and this bomb needs to be placed somewhere to get a maximum impact, meaning that the bomb will explode not in an elderly home for old men without legs and stuff like that. No, that wouldn't, that, because it needs to work in media. So
it has to work, it has to have a psychological impact in the psyche of the people.
Yeah. So you need kids, bleeding kids, women, they love nuns, nurses, you know, that type of thing. Mm. And often, like, you know, with the Boston bombing, I love that.
Community heroes.
The guy, you know, don't hurt innocent people. You know, they prepare it all like that. Mm. And then, so secretly, the person who wants to take over, if, for instance, this is me, let's say my goal is that I want the police to have tanks in the street and kick in your doors and do whatever they want without warrants or whatever. If that is what I want to accomplish, I need to make a real impact to be able to do that, for people to react against it. So I put a massive bomb, for instance, in Melbourne. I don't know, but for sure there's a daycare center, a big thing near a hospital, lots of women there. Yep. You need to do it prime time media as well. So maybe midday or early morning, not in the middle of the night, you know, because you don't get the same images. So midday, sun has to be up. And the kids have to be there. Boom! The bomb goes off. Media is on standby. Woof! You get all these horrific images going out, sending out the shockwaves of horror to people.
Yeah.
And people will just say, oh my God, something needs to be done. And before that, in the media that you control, you have prepared this patsy, whoever that is, you know, so that as soon as the bomb goes off, you would point. They were the ones.
Yeah.
They were the ones. And so people would say, but do something, do something. And they would come to me, who is the one in so-called power. And I said, well, I'm really sorry, but the only way I can deal with this situation is by putting tanks in the street and letting the police just kick in doors and whatever. Yeah, martial law, you give it the whole bollocks. And people would say, but please do, you're a hero, please, please. So, and what they then do is like I put the tanks in the streets, I grab the patsy, I get rid of him because he's annoying anyway. It's often a group that they have a problem with. No, but like with Timothy McVeigh, you know, people, groups of people where they just say, listen, we have our own society, we have our own guns, you can just piss off. We are going to be our own little country.
Independent.
Independent. Yeah. This is a problem for them. So they will get rid of those, put in the tanks, and then once the problem is solved, they will move back the tanks, but they will leave the soldiers, or they will put all the do you know, like, so that you will say, oh my God, thank God we solved it.
Oh, I feel safe now.
And then the tanks go away and you say, oh, thank God. But you don't notice that all the soldiers that are still in the streets, you know, and the search one, because they're doing it for my own good. It's so kind of them, you know? Oh, come on. That's problem reaction solution. So when all the time when there is such an act, you have to see what comes after. You know, when 9/11, the buildings, the dust hadn't even gone down before they started talking about the war on terror. What is that?
Yeah.
The war on terror? Who are you going to fight? You know, and Tony, and then you have to see with these, the Bilderberg group and so on, why suddenly people like Mitterrand from France, why Tony Blair, why the Swedish Prime Minister stands joined together like this? Yes, let's go. Where did that come from? Within minutes of it happening. Normally that would take months and months. They can't even agree on anything on a low scale. Yeah. Now suddenly it's just go and bum the shit out of everyone. You know, we'll just continue as long as you'll allow us, you know. So this is the thing, that when something like this happens, see the solution. What is the solution? Like, for instance, with this.
What is the solution they wish to implement?
Exactly.
Is that what you're referring to?
Exactly. Mm. And they do it with, they, do you know, like if they can't go on a logical thing, they go emotional. That is why these Help for Hero t-shirt and the medals and the red gun, you know, they pump you with it. Yeah. And then what is the solution? Then there was after the beheading in Woolwich, there was a friend, that something happened in France just after it. I haven't checked it out. This is what they said on English news, because just because they say it on English news doesn't mean that it happened. And but the way they put it, it's so beautifully. I mean, we're talking about, at the moment, Islam is the one that they really go for. You know, it works because if you're a Muslim,
that's right.
They manage to Muslim equal terrorist. They don't know that Islam is actually a very peaceful religion, very conservative.
Exactly.
You know? But in our mind, it's just been, oh, my God, he's got a moustache and he looks scary and his name is Muhammad al-Khawa, terrorist. That's it. Boom. Anyway, so after there were all these riots in London aimed at the Muslims, you know, divide and conquer and blaming. And then they said, my God, we need to censor the internet as well to stop websites from spreading, you know, Islamic views and extremists. And speaking of who is extreme, you and I will for sure be extreme when it comes to these type of laws. And also they wanted to stop immigration. And you see these ding, 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 ding. And then they pumped it up with this one from France. And what did they say? It was a soldier, one in the SWAT teams, you know, anti-terrorist. He was anti-terrorist. He was a real
terrorist team. Yeah.
He was anti-terrorist. And he was stabbed in the neck by a man with a big, big beard. Yeah. Who's got big beard nowadays? Muslims.
Yeah, it's all the Muslims, yeah.
From North African heritage, okay, Islam. And he had European clothes on top of his Arab clothing. He had Arab clothing underneath. What does that say? Muslim. You know, they just, they don't say it like that. They just do it like this. They play.
No, it's an indirect. Yeah, it's indirect.
Ping pong.
Yeah.
Brain.
It is. It's a psyops. You know, I've often said that, you know, this is psychological warfare.
It is.
That we're, big time. Yeah, they're working on the psyche of humanity. They're really trying to skew and distort and manipulate and create all these filters in the mental framework of people. So they're seeing the world through these filters, through these programs, and through the lenses of these programs are just pumping into people's psyche. It's just amazing. That's why I just, every time I'm near a television now, I just feel all that energy, all the subliminal energies. I'm very sensitive to it because, you know, I've been through a lot myself. They've tried to program me. Because I've been abducted and I've been tortured and I've been subjected to these programs, and so I understand what's going on. I can feel the tactics. I can see what's happening, and I just feel a lot of discomfort every time I'm near a television that's on, and I have to block it out. I do. I've got my own techniques of blocking it out, but I'd rather not have to. You know, it's like you don't have to expose yourself to an unpleasant environment. If you don't have to, you don't have to. But it's amazing.
But look how they now got everybody hooked up to the internet. Do you know this one?
Yeah.
Everybody's like zombies now with an iPhone here and there and everywhere. It's sort of like people don't even talk. You see them taking photos of the food, putting on Facebook before they even say, bless the food and thank you for inviting me, you know, like.
Well, you know who runs it's an artificial intelligence that runs the military-industrial complex.
I did not know
that. That's who's running it. And this artificial intelligence has got its origins off-world. Yeah, it's quite an ancient entity, and it's teamed up with another entity, which is the god of religions that molests the spirits of humans because it solicits worship. And so the two of them in cahoots, it's like two mafia groups that have got together, and it's a two-pronged attack on this planet. So, yeah, that's what's going on. That's the big picture stuff that I'm involved with.
Well, charming.
Yeah, that's where it leads to, if you eventually find where it all leads to. But having said all that, I've got to say, Ole, the impact in the short term, where do you see this is heading towards now in the short term for us on the ground here, bringing it back to a more grounded approach rather than me getting all space cadet on the subject matter, which I tend to do. So in a more grounded approach, where do you feel this is all headed at in the short term for us all?
I live one day at a time. And But I'm super optimistic. I used to be very paranoid, but I'm super optimistic. Yep. I think there's such an awakening going on. Especially after 2013, I don't know what happened, but it just feels go, go, go. And from
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, for me, it's amazing because it's like I said, I put out the book there on the internet 2012. I tried to get it published so many years, and only a handful of people have read it, been blown away, but I have not been able to get anywhere with it. And then I put it out there, and it's been like a tidal wave of interest, international. And suddenly, I find myself in front of audiences instead of being looked upon as being a weirdo. So something is massively happening, and there's this craving for knowledge now. So there's a race at the moment with the light and the dark. They're really going like dragsters speeding ahead, you know. And this also makes the elite very sloppy because I feel they're getting very desperate because they can't move around like they used to be in the darkness. There's a massive spot right on them.
Yeah, they can't anymore. And you know what, Ole? Our consciousness, the consciousness of humanity, is in such a volatile position right now that the more they do in the public arena, the more we wake up.
I know.
So they're in this quandary where it's in their best interest to make sure that these sort of incidences don't occur now. This is what's happened. There's been a flip, right? So every time they want to create one of these disasters to implement their legislations, because everybody's more aware, we see through their lies and through the deception so much easier. It's like they're backed into a corner now. They don't know what to do.
I know.
So they're going to, you know, they're heading towards pulling out the big cards, right?
Yeah.
They're maneuvering all the chess pieces behind the scenes because they need to pull out the big card. So the old guard of the military industrial complex is now surplus to requirements. And this would really piss them off to actually hear me say that big time. But this is the message I send to them because I have their best interest at heart. And the message to those guys is, in case you're not aware, you guys are all surplus to requirements and you are going to be disposed of in any way, shape or form by your overlords, because what they want to do is come in and implement their measures because their measures are on a level of consciousness and psycho analytical levels of mental framework, which is far superior to the lower military industrial complex methods and capabilities. So these guys are now outranked, and because their methods are actually going to be detrimental to the bigger agenda. So these guys are cornered. Either way, they're screwed. Yeah. So they either have to turn themselves around and come back to life in its purest sense, or they're going to continue down a one-way street. And what awaits for them at the end of that one-way street is not a very pleasant set of circumstances.
No. Do you know the yellow brick road?
Yes.
Yeah. And then they come and there's this, the Wizard of Oz, you know, that sounds exactly really scary. And then they find out that behind the curtains, there's this little old guy with a massive microphone. That's the thing. All of these are, they're old guys, you know, they think they're powerful. What does that mean? What? How many are they? Like 2,000, 3,000? Sorry, we're like 9 billion. I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke. Give it up. Give it up, guys. And I just want to say to all armed forces, to all policemen, to all people that think that they are doing good in uniform, please check out who you're serving. Please. Because if you go out and even sacrifice your life for these guys, it is so sad. It is so sad. And for you to realize that you're just empty uniforms, they will get rid of you. If you don't fit their agenda, you're out of here. It doesn't matter what it says, general, lieutenant, colonel, blah, blah, hoppa, hoopa. You're no one to them. Just a meme. So before you start harassing normal people and do their thing and think that you're something big and powerful just because you got some kind of tailor-made suit on, look into who you're serving, who you have sworn loyalty. And even if you've sworn loyalty to something that you find out was not what you thought it was, step out, step back, take back your own power. Stop it. Stop it for your own sake. Do not violate your own soul by doing these horrific things.
They're actually destroying what they think they stand for.
I know it's so strange. All these people going with the UN troops and with NATO troops and thinking Operation Freedom or operate. I love all of these names. Come on. And when they find out that my God, we're here as enforcers, business enforcers, just you don't want to come with us, we're just gonna crush you. Yeah. Rape and plunder. And you think you're there for an heroic act? And you get very confused because the Iraqi people throw rocks at you.
Right, all they're doing is clearing the way for big corporate business to come in and and rape that
But
country.
just please become aware of it because it's so sad, all of these awful things that happen, all of these lives that gets messed up from people not being aware.
Yeah, totally agree. Wow.
So stop.
What a fantastic discussion. Yeah. I feel like the energy is winding up here, Ole. I wanted to ask you, is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners? Because, like I say, you've shown to us here in this discussion that you are a man of great wisdom and of integrity. And it's very, very important that anything else you have to share with our listeners, would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, I have a prayer that my yoga teacher, it's not Hatha yoga, I'm stiff like a log, but Raja yoga, that is the king of yoga, that means the science of the mind. It's a 5,000-year-old science, a beautiful, absolutely beautiful philosophy, not a religion, philosophy, that Gandhi and Martin Luther King and many other beautiful souls have had like the basic foundation. Anyway, I have this absolutely magnificent teacher, Nelini Chelaram, and she has this prayer where it says, "May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light, and may everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light." I think that is beautiful.
Fantastic. It is. It's so simple and beautiful, isn't it?
So simple, because this is the thing. If you come from hate, if you come from revenge, you are, do you know what a revolution is? What does that mean? Revolution.
Revolution. Just coming back around and round again.
And so you see again and again, people are standing up. They managed to get rid of a dictator. 5 years later, they're worse than the ones before. Another revolution. 5 years later, they're worse. You need to break the circle. And the only way to move forward, in my opinion, is forgiveness and love, these two, and letting go of greed and attachment and all of these things, and see each other as beautiful souls. And when we do that, we're just gonna transcend this whole thing, and this whole game will just stop. And I believe that what we're moving into, which is why I feel so great about the future, is that we're beyond duality, beyond me and mine and all of this minefield, that it's free. we, let's enjoy us and let's just lift the whole thing.
I wholeheartedly agree. We are truly one when it comes to our passion, our yearning, our understanding and our intentions of life. It is just a beautiful thing. Thank you for shining your beautiful light.
Thank you.
And yeah, it's been an absolute honor, Ole. And please, once again, share with us your information so people can further discover your work, your research, your fantastic ocean of knowledge and information, which is truly revealing, like truly revealing. We barely scratched the surface, seriously. I've got to say this, folks, for all of you who have listened and have sat through this conversation, the detail in the content that Ole has put together, the passion, the drive, you know, we're talking a life's work here. And when you really look and into this wonderful wealth of information that Ole presents, you will see something incredible emerging. It is, really, really, the clarity is amazing. So thank you, Ole.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, once again, my website is the three W's, lightonconspiracies.com. lightonconspiracies.com. And my intention, in my biography, there's a lot of links to what I've done, so you can click and see whatever it was. And also, I think there's still music you can download and all this. For me, all of these, it doesn't matter, writing, painting, music, whatever. I think they totally go hand in hand. So I think it's very simple.
We seem to have shared what we needed to share to the listeners.
Yeah.
And the energy's there, even though the dialogue probably has been different to a lot of your other interviews. It was probably more generalized in a lot of areas, but I feel that the space that you and I have created here in this unified field of love and understanding and passion, and even, you know, there's the warrior archetype going on here. We stand in our integrity, making a stand against the system that only seeks to completely molest and suppress and subdue and apprehend humanity. And we're not allowing for that. That we're not willing to compromise that. This is where we draw the line in the sand and we say, enough, no more. And this is who we are. And in all honesty, you know what? This is our planet. And we contracted you guys to come here and do this to us. So we're just reminding you that that agreement has now reached its fulfillment. It's the era has come to a close, and now you need to realize and wake up and snap out of the trance that you're in and allow us all to live in harmony on this planet, because this is our planet, not just your planet. It's actually our planet, and we're reclaiming our planet, and that's what we're here to do.
I also want to say that, at least for me, I know that many people are very upset with this group, but I just feel that do not be afraid of us. I think many of this elite, they know that they have blood on their hands. They know that they have been into big, big things that is no good at all. But for me, as long as you take a step out of it and let it go, you're so welcome in my world. Stop it. Stop it. Do your job. And just like you said, especially insiders who take a step out are so valuable. So don't be afraid. We will do everything we can to protect you. And step out, join us, and make it a beautiful place.
Yeah, because we're not someone who seeks justice. You see, justice is glorified revenge.
Yeah.
See, we don't seek justice. We seek healing, forgiveness, and just moving forward in life and say, thank you, you played a wonderful role. It's like, you guys were good. We wanted the best. We got the best. You guys, we couldn't have asked for a better job to challenge us in the way that you've challenged us. It's just been amazing. Yeah, they're really good at what they do. And because, you know, we've done it in previous times. So, you know, we were pretty good at it too. We've played those roles as well at stages in our journey through this amazing universe. So these guys are pretty good too. So it's been a fantastic exchange. I'll say it's been an incredible co-created experience from both sides and from all sides. And it's now time to bring this play to an end and get on with life.
Time to shake hands, have a shower and a cold beer. Say thank you for this. It's been a good game.
beautiful. Well said, Ole. All right, mate. Well, until we meet again next time, which I've got a pretty strong feeling there's going to be a next time, I just want to share my appreciation. Continue to shine your brilliant and beautiful light.
The honour is mine.